The name of our podcast, Tech Sequences, is really a mashup of two words, technology and consequences. We are fascinated by the consequences, intended or unintended, of the internet and related technologies for the way we live, play, and work. We are your hosts, Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. We started our careers at the dawn of the internet and have been friends, colleagues, and comrades in arms for the better part of 20 years. In this podcast, we examine the impact internet-related technologies have made or may make in our lives. I'm Alexa Rod.
And I'm Leslie Daigle.
Welcome to Tech Sequences. Those of us born in the latter part of the 20th century have witnessed an astonishing pace of technological change. We have witnessed the third industrial revolution, which ushered in the digital age, give way to the fourth industrial revolution. This one has debuted artificial intelligence, robotics, the Internet of Things, genetic engineering, and quantum computing, to name a few. What was the fuel driving each industrial revolution, you ask? The profit motive, of course. Capitalism has funded each successive revolution by making bets on individuals, companies, and ultimately the technological advances they advocate. In the process, it has also created tech companies whose annual revenues outpace the gross domestic product of some nation states. For example, Alphabet, Google's parent company, generated revenues of $183 billion in 2020, almost equivalent to the gross domestic product for Qatar. That may not raise eyebrows, but instead, think of how much power Google and its parent company, Alphabet, wield globally versus the tiny nation of Qatar. If power is possession of control, authority, or influence over others, then innovation is the hook to amass power. Tech companies are now driving innovation in areas such as AI, 5G, robotics, and even gene editing. Many of these advances offer enormous promise for our lives, ranging from the mundane to the spectacular. Take AI in medicine, for example. If fighting novel viruses with effective treatments or vaccines is a priority, then you need to determine the 3D shape of the distinctive spike protein to understand how it functions. In other words, if we can understand how proteins are folded into specific three-dimensional shapes, we can design far more effective treatments because we understand the biology of the disease. And yet, determining the 3D shape of a protein has been one of biology's most vexing problems, until AI, that is. Artificial intelligence can now use a protein's DNA sequence to calculate its folded shape with the shocking accuracy of no more than an atom's width. Or consider the discovery of CRISPR gene editing technique in 2012, legitimately hailed as one of the most significant advances in modern biology. In 2020, the Nobel Committee acknowledged its significance when it awarded the Nobel Prize in Chemistry to the scientists who first developed the technique. CRISPR is best described as a pair of molecular scissors capable of making simple, clean, and accurate changes to the DNA of any organism, leading to boundless applications. Its implications for human reproduction are extraordinary. For example, if an embryo's genome could be edited in vitro, parents might be able to make over their offspring's genetic makeup, adding desirable traits as well as deleting undesirable ones. Perhaps it is our indomitable spirit, our persistent optimism, that often overestimates the positive advances or underestimates or ignores the less savory ones. Despite a myriad of benefits, there are some inconvenient and sometimes unintended consequences for many of these technologies, least of which is putting in play the sequence for our own extinction. So where to from here? How do we even begin to address what we may not even know?
Our guest today is entrepreneur, futurist, and author Christopher Ategeka. His new book, The Unintended Consequences of Technology, Solutions, Breakthroughs, and the Restart We Need, explores the challenges and the opportunities at the intersection of technology, society, and our planet. He is the founder and CEO at UCOT Inc., a company that has created a unique model to support and fund early stage startups creating solutions to unintended and willfully ignored consequences of technology. Chris also founded UCOT Forum, a conference whose main objective is to have authentic discussions around exponential technology development and usage that may not be serving humanity's best interests. Before that, he founded Hourglass Ventures, a fund that supports visionary entrepreneurs from the African continent. He has been a speaker at TED, Clinton Global Initiatives, and the United Nations. Chris has been recognized as a TED Fellow, Ashoka Fellow, Echoing Green Fellow, and most recently named by the World Economic Forum as a young leader. He is also listed in Forbes magazine 30 Under 30. Welcome, Christopher.
Thank you for having me.
So when we heard about this book, we knew we had to have you on as a guest, since what you're tackling in the book is the very issue that really that we attempt to discuss on every episode here, the intended and unintended consequences of technology. So please tell us why you are interested in the topic and how your views are shaped as a founder and an entrepreneur.
Well, Leslie and Alexa, again, thank you for having me. I really appreciate you guys. We are going through a revolution, and humanity is at the crossroads right now. The explosion of technology and its exponential advancements are reshaping what it means to be human. We are in some sort of a trance where the benefits of technology are blinding us from seeing what may not be going right. Because if you can click a button and get your food delivered on your door, or you go on Amazon and order something and it shows up that same day, you feel like things are going great. But there's this idea that we have given all rights to humans and no rights to nature. And we are seeing the effect. I'm in California right now, and there's fires everywhere. And there is some correlation between the natural disasters that are happening today and how they are becoming more and more exponential with our usage of technology. So there is a sad reality that yesterday's action are today's reactions. So there is a delay, there's a time lag between when things happen and when the actual negative effect does happen. So with our technology advancement on an exponential level, we're getting things better, faster, efficient in the best way possible. But at the same time, that same technology is a double-edged sword where it does have an exponential abilities and capabilities for destruction and harm. So right off the top here, I want to mention one thing. I love technology. I use technology. My family uses technology. This is not against technology conversation, quote unquote. It is a conversation that needs to be had. Putting a blind eye to it doesn't necessarily make it go away. It just, tosses the ball in the future, and we'll have to deal with it. To me, I feel like we are the first generation that is experiencing the unintended consequences of technology on an exponential level. But we are also the last generation that has the ability to potentially change course, and the choice is ours. So I'm very, very excited about this work and continue to make sure that, we as individuals work hard to not push ourselves, human species and other species on the planet towards the edge.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm not going to admit how old I am, but it is depressing to look back at the number of species that have disappeared during my lifetime. Just to put it, to make it a little bit more concrete in terms of the unintended consequences, or the you don't know what you didn't know, we talked about CRISPR in the intro, and there certainly have been some unintended consequences there. So, for example, when Chinese researchers deleted a gene that limits muscle growth in mammals so that rabbits would grow leaner, they found that their rabbits also had an unusual characteristic, enlarged tongues. And similar experiments on Chinese pigs led some to develop an additional vertebrae. So those are maybe not huge surprises, but they certainly were not entirely benign, and maybe not as shocking as some of the things we see in science fiction movies, but really they're real. I mean, an enlarged tongue that doesn't fit in the mouth is more than a slight inconvenience for an animal. But so how worried should we be really about sort of the consequences of gene editing tools, and how can you balance, you know, the potential from something like CRISPR with some of these unintended consequences?
Well, I think as humans, we underestimate human stupidity. We also underestimate what might go wrong, because most of the time we're really too focused on what's going right. So with gene editing, there's no doubt that anyone can stand and say that's not an amazing technology. It is, has been, and continue to be. 2020, we were all hit with a pandemic, and the only savior that was available to come around and all of us get out of this lockdown and try to get back to somewhat to normal lives. Again, I want to caveat that by saying in Western countries, because there's plenty of other countries that have not accessed the vaccine yet. But the vaccine is a powerful tool, and it would have taken longer to happen if it wasn't for gene editing. And there's other vaccines that are in development like now, like malaria and HIV, using the same techniques. And that's very exciting and promising. But at the same time, you could do 1,000 things right and only takes one wrong for it to really get out of whack. And with gene editing, we've seen some labs continue to this day to work really hard to eliminate species, bad species, like malaria-causing mosquitoes. That's an amazing invention. However, we do not have a whole lot of sense on what we could do if some sort of a mutation ended up in bees and eliminated bees, or if an individual, a dictator or some bad actor decided they wanted to eliminate a certain species or a certain human race or a certain gender or a certain, and it's possible with this technology. It is possible. Again, safety engineering is kind of what really needs to happen here. Like, how can we enjoy the benefits, but at the same time, be aware of what could go wrong?
Yeah, I think that diversity is an area that we just generally don't understand well enough. So we may think, eradicate certain species and everything will be fine. But I'm put in mind of... We're beginning to learn the effects of lack of diversity in our food chain. For instance, the number of different types of wheat that are grown now across the globe is a fraction of the number of types of wheat that were grown 100 years ago. Yet every type of wheat has its own benefits and strengths. That's an area where, at the end of the 19th century, choices were made to focus on the best producing types of wheat, and now we're all eating wheat and it's great. And only now, 120 years later, we find maybe not so great to have eliminated all those different heritage breeds of this particular grain. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about sort of those kinds of consequences in terms of reducing diversity as a negative consequence or better paths forward.
I feel like as humans, we, let's start in nature. There is no such a thing as waste in nature. And you have a plant grow, a leaf falls, it's food for something else. And there's this regenerative system that's a loop. And nature has kept that working for millions of years until we came around and we started creating things that are not in that loop. They are not going to be recycled or reused. So because that's the case, you know, you find someone is, you know, using plastics or using something and they're going to throw it away, quote unquote. Where is a way? A way is a planet. A way is a house for another animal. A way is a you know, house for another, you know, species. And some of these things that we are creating are not, they're not going to decompose for millions and millions of years. And again, it goes back to the idea that we have given so much power to and lots of rights to ourselves as humans. And we see ourselves on top of the food chain. And we have not given a whole lot of rights to nature, to our waterways, to our trees, and all the things that keep us alive. And we're seeing this effect today with climate change. You know, to your point, as humans, we have a hard time proactively looking to the future to see what might go wrong, because really we're too selfish focused on what we are going to benefit from today. You know, 100 years from now, there might be a generation that's dealing with all the things that we're acting on today, but we won't be around to see it. So as a human species, we're terrible at proactive measures. We're terrible at proactive thoughts. We're very good at reactive thoughts because of our monkey brain. You know, something goes wrong, we jump and we try to fix it. Like right now, literally, there's thousands of people who are in their cars, driving, evacuating in lots of places in California. That's a reaction, but we are very bad at proactive measures.
But when you mentioned about waste, when I grew up, there wasn't as much consumption of throwaway plastics. So if you wanted a cup of coffee, it was served to you in a China cup, and now it's plastic, and plastic takes anywhere from 20 years to 500 years to decompose. And now we're finding that out. As you said, you know, it's after the fact and realizing that, you know, we don't have any places to even send our trash anymore. You, in your book, you have talked about various technologies, anywhere from, you know, blockchain to IoT to AI to 5G. There's some technologies that have created these conspiracy theories, right? Around 5G, for example. And then there are other technologies, like we talked about the gene editing, that have already produced some amazing results with immediate impact on our lives. If you had to distinguish between the technologies where you think are the ones that are most worrisome, what would they be? And what are the technologies where you think the downside, at least from what we know now today, is significantly less?
I would be very rich if I had that answer. No, I don't think I have a very specific answer to that question, but I can say the technology that keeps me up at night that has a really, really high potential, we could potentially innovate ourselves toward extinction, is gene editing. We are playing God. We are playing God. And that is a technology you don't want to get wrong at any level. No room for error, right? But this same technology is everywhere. And you can order the kit off Amazon and start tinkering in your lab, at home, in your garage. And so if you were to ask me to rank them, I would say that is what most scares me as an individual. Again, this is a one person opinion, but there is technologies like artificial intelligence that is not a short term. That's like going to be a long term. The effect is not going to happen right away because there's a lot of benefits that are coming out of the technology. And as individuals, AI is, you know, the negative effect, the exponential, the biases, the all the negative things that make us human, you know, we are transferring that into AI. All the good and bad, we're transferring it into AI. And some of these things may take a while to have a bigger impact, but it's an exponential growth as opposed to like something that could happen and has no reverse button. I think gene editing is the most scary to me.
You mentioned that right today we can order something from Amazon that we could do gene editing. Now, what do you mean?
Oh no, so with gene editing, the technology has been made so simple, so accessible, which is an amazing thing that anyone can purchase a tool, bring it home and tinker and create product services, do science at home. Gene editing can easily order a kit and play and tinker. Anyone can.
With plants, you mean, or?
With plants, with human parts, with whatever you want to play with that has that capabilities. So it's not, it's similar to, you know, if you wanted to go to Home Depot and buy something to, you know, you can put some seeds in a bowl and you can get some seedlings and you do a plant. From Home Depot. So if you can do that, you're able to do it with gene editing. And the idea is that let's democratize technology. Let's have more people involved, which is amazing. But that democratization can also be, destructive at scale too.
You mentioned in your book title even, we need a restart, because clearly the direction that we've been going, we aren't very good at judging when there's going to be negative impacts, if not immediately, then collectively and in the future. So what is the restart that we need?
Well, the restart goes back to the incentive structures as to where and how these technologies are developed. About 400 years ago, there was this thing called slavery. And slavery was one of those things that was so terrible that some people saw a lot of benefits. But also there's a lot of people who saw what was wrong, what was unethical about it. And they really wanted to do something about it. However, the whole world economy literally was sitting on the shoulders of the slaves. Even if you were like Mother Teresa and you wanted to eliminate slavery that specific moment, like you have a magic wand and it goes away, the whole world economy would collapse. Up until there was some thoughts of figuring out what could replace this slave labor, what other ways can we have production that's not dependent on this free labor, that people slowly were able to transition. So similarly today, our world economy literally sits on the shoulders of capitalism. And because it sits on the shoulders of capitalism, capitalism is the incentive structure for all the technological developments, or most of the technological developments we have today. Now, can we abolish capitalism today and, you know, say, oh, well, problem solved? Not quite, not really. We can't do that easily. So what needs to happen, to answer your question, is really we need to rethink what our incentive structures are. No one needs $1 trillion in the bank. No one needs that much money in the bank. If we could figure out a structure that is more, kind of like more stakeholder centric as opposed to shareholder centric. And by stakeholders, I mean people, I mean our planet, as major stakeholders that are taken into consideration while creating, I think that would have some ideas and some effect. This idea of shareholder capitalism, where winner takes all, and you can just grow as big as you'd like, and you get so much money, well, you know, majority of the people are suffering, is what gets us here. And it's what will keep us here. But it won't keep us here for long, because nothing grows forever. Anything from nature to human objects, things go up, and at some point they gotta come down. Unless, you know, it's a spacecraft that you shoot out and still, if you take it out of space and explode it, the particles will remain somewhere. So the idea that capitalism will continue on this exponential growth and financial maximization is an illusion. We have to rethink it. We have to restructure it. And that is, to me personally, that's what I think needs to happen as a solution.
So are you aiming to drive some of that rethinking in, you know, how you support venture capital approaches to things, or how can you make that happen, or anyone else make that happen in their world today? I mean, I take your point about Mother Teresa could not have solved slavery on her own. So how can we as individuals contribute to making change?
I want to speak to the point of view as individuals in a second, but what there's an interesting kind of like funny thought process of saying, hey, once you hit $1 billion, all right, like you've won capitalism, you get a certificate that says you're won, you're good. And maybe name a dog park after you. And then anything else you make above and beyond that is to make humanity better, is to take care of our planet. How about that? How about that for an idea, right? But it's the fact that we need to come up with some creative thoughts on how individuals can get and hit some spot and feel that enough is enough, as opposed to just continuing growth. But as individuals, you and I, we may not have $1 trillion. I don't know about you, but I don't.
Sadly, no.
we have power, and our power lies in what I call our votes. So there are three types of votes. The first vote is what everyone understands as a vote. It's a ballot where you go on in a box and you check off and you vote for people who represent your views. So the ability for all of us to go and vote for representatives and policymakers that care about our planet, care about humanity, care about future generations is very important. Like that's where we may not have $1 trillion. We have that power to get on the ballot box and vote. The second vote is what I call we vote with our attention. So anything you click on, every ad you click on, every news article you click on, you're voting, but you may not think of it as a vote. You're voting and indicating that this content is good. I like this content. And then you're telling the creator of this content that make more of this. And voting with our attention is very important. To choose on which things you're going to click on and which articles you're going to read and which platforms you're going to be part of. If they don't support, again, the stakeholder mindset of people on our planet. And then the third and final vote that you and I have is voting with our money. You know, every dollar you spend, it could be a purse, it could be a burger. You know, if you buy a burger, you are indicating that make more beef, grow more cows. And as we know, cows are one of the biggest, CO2 producers, in the world, one of the biggest. When you buy something, you're indicating to the person who's creating the thing that make more of this. And that's a vote that you have. That's a vote that I have. So if we take these three votes into consideration on everyday ways of going about our lives, I think we can have some impact. Is it the ultimate solution? I don't think it is the ultimate solution, but it is a starting point.
It's interesting you say how we actually vote, and you could almost argue that the way that we vote with our attention is actually driving the way we vote at the ballot box, and how that could be manipulated really affects the end result down at the ballot box. We've seen that happen in multiple elections already. What I think about when I listen to this is that this is a huge problem. And I totally see where we are at this window, this closing window of time, certainly with climate change. We're living that now, where if we don't put some things in place, put some measures in place, we're gonna miss that. With other technologies, like you said, with AI, it's still somewhat hazy. Some things are still, quite far away in terms of how things will play out and the balance of the good versus bad. But in terms of the balance of power, the people who have the $1 trillion, the increasing divide between the haves and the have-nots, it's hard to see how we might turn that around. I mean, Jeff Bezos isn't about to give up his billions or trillions, actually. There doesn't seem to be any kind of impetus or appetite in our system of government to put some brakes in place so that these organizations don't become bigger and bigger, so that we check this divide between the haves and the have-nots. So, are you being too optimistic, too utopian to put this out that perhaps we can change this?
We need to be optimistic to some extent. Otherwise, the world is in such a dark space that it is very depressing. but to your point, there's social, there's economic, there's political forces at play that puts us in this position. And people like Jeff Bezos and the like in that class are able to literally buy every single one of those systems. They will buy politics through this thing called, and in developing countries, they call it corruption, but in developed countries, they call it lobbying. Wink, wink. It's one of those things that it's so ingrained in the political system that people with who you're calling have the ability to just pay their way into writing policies that are in their favor. However, I'll give an example of San Francisco. In San Francisco, there's a time when tech was most of the tech jobs were down in the South Bay, and there was a need for big buses that literally, they used to call them Google buses, but every tech company, Facebook, Genentech, every single one of them had a big bus that would drive people from San Francisco down to the South Bay to go to work and pick them up in the evening and bring them back. So that created a huge problem because these people are getting tech money and they're raising the rent. The natives of San Francisco most of them got to a point where they started feeling that they can't afford to live in the city because these people are just paying these exuberant amounts to, you know, of money for rent. And people got upset. They got angry at these Google buses. Like literally, you can look this up. Like people started throwing eggs. They were throwing objects. They were throwing things at the Google buses. And what happened was there was a change made where the buses now no longer had a label on it. So you can't, you just see a bus with no label. You don't know whether it's a bus or not. But they were forced to change because now bringing your employees into our city and making our lives a living hell was not fun anymore. So personally, I feel there's a metaphorical egging that's about to happen, that's in the works on big tech companies. So the more bigger you get, the more, because it's not sustainable. This haves and have nots, it's the gap is so wide that people are getting anxious and they're getting frustrated. They're getting upset that there will be a metaphorical egging. And this egging will force companies to either, you know, kind of like scale down, break up companies instead of like acquiring every competitor and becoming the biggest it can possibly be is not as interesting. It's not as politically, correct anymore. Then you think about how you're going to break down the company into smaller pieces, and being small becomes more cool. Is that the ultimate solution? Maybe not, but it is a starting point to realize that, you know, going up exponentially is not the way we need to go. And that could maybe change some minds and change the psyche of our general public and society, and hopefully we can see some change.
Yeah, I have to say that largely I agree with that sentiment. I'm not sure that the metaphorical egging needs to start with tech companies, given that there are something like 4 or 12 companies that actually are in control of 80 or 90% of the US food distribution. So all of those brands that you think are independent brands are actually all funneling up to these very few companies. Mm. So, I mean, that's an area where breaking things up into individual pieces, you might lose some of the economies of scale, but should any of those companies falter, half the grocery store shelves will be empty, which is kind of a terrifying thought, or at least should be. So I have to admit, speaking of looking things up, I did actually have to go and look up gene editing on Amazon, and I was a little distressed to find the CRISPR sgRNA synthesis kit from BioVision Inc. on Amazon. Fortunately, currently not available, but the point stands that, you know, this is kind of terrifying stuff to have access to for the general public.
Yep. Miniaturization and democratizing of technology is so much fun and it's exciting. Everybody gets it, but the impact of what could go wrong is also so terrifying.
Indeed. But I'm going to stay focused on your point about slavery was eventually abolished because enough people realized it was morally wrong and that there was a need for changing the overall structure of the economy. So I will remain optimistic that we will collectively figure it out in some way. But it's certainly been a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate you guys. Enjoy the conversation.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this TechSequences podcast. We are Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. You can reach us by email, TechSequences@TechSequences.org. We'd love to hear from you to know what you thought about this episode or ideas for future episodes. TechSequences. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook and subscribe through your favorite podcasting service.